I've been talking about this for a while now, but it looks like tomorrow we're going to have registration up for our half million half marathon. We're hoping to raise €500,000 for Laura Lynn Children's Hospice. And we've spoken about this before, and in my humble estimation, it's the most deserving charity in the country. But don't take my word for it. We have the lady who sort of set up Laura Lynn, Jane McKenna, with us, and we also have Amy Cunningham. And unfortunately, Amy has to use the services of Laura Lynn's Children's Hospice for her daughter Ellie. You're both welcome.
Hi, yes.
This is a freaky thing. You know me and religion and coincidences and all that. I'd be very skeptical about all that. But we've arranged to do this half marathon in Phoenix Park on Good Friday, which is April the 18th, and we're hoping to get 2,000 people to raise £250 each, and that'll bring us up to €500,000.
Brilliant.
But we were saying that along, and then you sent us a card, and in the card you told me that
Lynn's anniversary is on that day. I couldn't believe it when I first heard the date. And I mean, I'm still a bit sceptical and stuff, Ray, to be honest. Now, I don't know where I am with religion, but I do think that the girls are around, and I always feel them around me and stuff like that. And I just think things like that, I mean, and there's been a lot of that sort of stuff throughout the years.
Yeah.
So I just thought, gosh, and what a nice day. I think it's great.
Yeah. And we were getting together stuff to put up on the website and all that, and we got pictures of you with the two girls, and just like beautiful girls. Sometimes you refer to Laura and her Shirley Temple curls.
Yeah. And I was really struck when Shirley Temple, and I was looking at her and saying, God, she did. At one point, she looked pretty much like her, you know, so it was,
And Lynn was such an attractive 15-year-old.
She was. I mean, all she wanted to do was grow the hair again, of course, you know, once she'd lost it a couple of times and grew back. But we all thought it was lovely, actually, because it really showed her eyes, and she never lost her eyebrows. I suppose she was luckier, the eyelashes, and she was lovely, you know. But of course, she wanted the long hair again, but never got to that, unfortunately.
And how are you now? I ask you that every time I meet you.
You know, I found, like, Laura would have been 19 now. I mean, she was 4 and a half when she died, so her birthday was on the 20th of January, and I just found the day this year. Sometimes it's kind of the time before, you know, maybe a few days before or whatever, and you don't find the day so bad, but it's tough, you know, and it's hard to explain. I suppose, as I say to people, that awful raw pain, I'm not sure it ever goes away. It eases, but each year that goes by, you do wonder what might have been and what they'd be doing. Lynn would be 28 now in March, and, you know, the 11th of March will be her birthday. And again, where would they be now? What would they be doing? And I suppose all the things that you're robbed of. But the only thing that always gives me comfort, well, a couple of things, I suppose, the two of them are together. And I hope they're somewhere. That I hope they are. I don't know either, you know. I mean, I don't think any of us do. And
no, nobody knows for certain.
You know, I just hope. I just feel through the years that they have kind of been there with me in spirit. And they've kind of helped me and guided me along the way and helped me make decisions around things and people and stuff like that. And the fact that Laura Lynn House is there, I mean, I know they'd be very happy.
What an amazing memory for them. Amy, you, I say, unfortunately, have to use it. I met you at the Children of Courage Awards. Ellie won one.
Yeah, she got the Children of Courage Awards this year. It was brilliant. And using Laura Lynn, I can't live without it. It's part of her life now, that since Ellie was born, we would have used the first service, which was the Children's Sunshine Home, and then now it's Laura Lynn. So we're there since Ellie is practically newborn. So it's she's 8 in June. So it's 8 years. It's kind of like, oh God.
I know Michael as like the nicest, coolest guy in the world. Mm. And my relationship with him was almost like a big brother. And the big brother he didn't have to worry about, because he knew I was like totally cool and non-judgmental. And we could just talk about everything, laugh. I was the hippie who defied his father. His father used to always say to me things like, in the old days, James Brown made it entertaining to find people on stage during, you know, while you were performing. Like, if somebody made a mistake, James Brown would look at it and go, $25, and that would mean he'd dock your pay 20, and it's part of the show.
Really?
Oh, you never. Oh, this is great. No, this became part of entertainment. Like, the band is like, $25, $15. Hey, what you playing over there, Maceo? $50. You know, so it was a whole thing. So this just became part of, like, the, you know, I guess like the, you know, the R&B discipline. I'm going to dock your pay. So his dad used to always say to me things like, Niall, I'm going to fine you, F-I-N-E, right? I'm going to fine you. Mm-hmm. And I would always say to him, well, if you do, you're going to find me, F-I-N-D, in another band.
Okay.
And Michael thought, like, wow, this guy's got serious chutzpah. Like, he's telling telling my dad, like, you know, he's basically saying, I don't care if I get fined. I don't care if I get fired, because I want to go play jazz anyway, so who cares?
Could he understand at that time why the media, or why he perceived the media were turning against him? Was it something that he was a child star all his life, adored by everybody.
Right.
He didn't know anything else outside of that.
I think that what happens is that when you live in that type of bubble, when you do things that seemingly are very odd to people but seem normal to you, you can't understand why other people think it's odd.
Okay.
Like you remember you asked me about the music that's in my head. I'm smart enough to know it's weird. I know the stuff that I love, most people would think it's ridiculous. So I have to have good editing skills. And that doesn't mean that I have good verbal editing skills. Sometimes I say ridiculous stuff. But when I'm writing and I have the time to look over my work, I can say, you know what? This probably won't pass the smell test of normal people, because they don't have, you know, this type of background that presupposes you know all this stuff.
Okay.
So there's nothing for them to relate to. So I think that Michael's world was so cut off in a strange way that he didn't quite know why people didn't relate to certain things that he thought was normal and fun and cool and just innocent.
I speak here not just as a gay person, but as a member of society who wants to be treated equally. I've been beaten, spat, chased, harassed, and mocked like Deppy Lyons because of who I am. I was born with a gift given to me, and I've spent most of my life struggling, and I'm finally at a place in my own country, which I love, to be accepted and to see the support from my fellow colleagues here in this house and from you, Ciarán Cóirla. It's a demonstration of how our society has gone and come forward.
Tell us a little bit more, Gerry, about the situations in which you were attacked.
Well, I suppose in my case, Matt, I spent 5 years in Fearn Fáras, which is with a seminary in Cork, and then 5 years in Maynooth studying for the priesthood. And religion and the teaching of religion was, and still to a point, is important to me. And ingrained in that was the issue of moral teaching regarding being gay. And that was one of the reasons why I did leave. And as a consequence, I suppose, in my life, I sheltered myself from accepting who I really was. And unlike John, and I really wish I had John's courage a long time ago to come out, and I came out 2 years ago, there was that reluctance on my behalf to break away from the societal norm. And, you know, I was involved in the GA, and still am involved in the GA, which is a great outlet. But there was the other part of my life that was very secret, very few knew. And in Cork, there was a nightclub called The Other Place, which is down, as people in Cork will know, between the Queen's Old Castle and South Main Street, at the back of St. Augustine's Church. There's a long, narrow, dark, lit little road. And one night coming out of there, was a couple of lads who thought they were going to have a bit of a fun, and they jumped on a couple of us and got a bit of an old thumping, you know. And to me...
And so how did you explain that then to people afterwards when you had been beaten up?
A combination of error. I had a few pints too many and walked into a lamp pole or whatever, and, you know, or even some people, I was playing five-a-side soccer and got a dig or whatever. And
so you were making excuses.
Yeah, making excuses. And there comes a point, and in my life, I made a decision in 2012 when I was appointed to the Constitutional Convention, and we were going to discuss the issue of marriage equality, that I was going to, with a number of other people, form within Fine Gael an LGBT group, and I was going to come out. Because I had to be true to myself and to what we were going to debate and to the issue of equality and to be that voice. But like John, I think the experiences that I've had have been, you know, they've been there, and I've friends of mine who've had a lot more horrific experience than they've had.
Did you actually contact the leadership of Fine Gael to tell them you were going to do that? Or
yes.
You did?
Absolutely, yeah.
And what was the reaction?
You know, people discuss Enda Kenny and they talk about him. I have to say, telling him was an extraordinary experience. I was sitting in his office. I came into his office, sat down with him, and said, "Taoiseach, I got something to tell you." I explained to my situation that I was gay and I was coming out and I wanted to form a group within Fine Gael. And I have to say this, he looked at me and he gave me a dig into the chest. He says, "You're still the same guy. I'm still mad about you. let's go do this, and anything you want, go talk to General Secretary and there'll be no problem. And that was the embrace from Enda Kenny, and people give out about him, but I can tell you one thing, genuinely, sitting in his office that evening, it was one of the most extraordinary feelings from two men, and genuinely, he's a man in his mid-50s or 60s who's from the west of Ireland, who may be uncomfortable and who may have gone on a big journey himself, and he has. He showed me great empathy and great support and affirmation.
It's 100 to 102 today, FM, and I'm delighted to welcome Mr. Guy Garvey to the airwaves. Are you well, sir?
I'm sound, thanks, Colin. It's a beautiful, bright sunny morning here in Brooklyn, New York, and I'm wearing my Iron Man pyjamas, and all is well with the world.
I love it. You know what? Whenever I see sunshine, or whenever I see sun up, sun down, there's a song that always comes to my mind, which sends shivers up my spine. It's One Day Like This, and It's unbelievably suited to that kind of way. Do you ever find yourself listening to your own songs or relating kind of, you know, special moments like that to those songs, because they seem to lend themselves to that? Do you ever find that?
Well, I, because we've just finished a record that we're very proud of, I didn't allow myself to listen to it for the last week or so, and then I went for a long walk yesterday and listened to it on my headphones. And it felt pretty good, you know. Mm. So, yeah, I don't often listen to my own music wandering around, but when we've just finished a record, yeah, I listen to it all the time. I think things like, I wonder if it works when I'm drunk, and then I'll get drunk and have a listen to it, you know. I wonder if it works in the middle of the night, and that kind of thing. So, right. Yeah.
That's good. It's great to have your own musical kind of library to delve into, to see, I suppose, what people will make of it when it goes out. But people have dipped into your music going right back, and the fan base has gotten bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and continues to grow. Mm-hmm. The last time you were in Ireland, I saw you playing the O2 in Dublin, and I have to say, you could hear a pin drop when you needed to, and you could also hear people screaming the roof down when you needed to. Do you kind of have to check yourself every now and again and go, oh, wow?
Well, yeah, you know. I mean, it's because the five of us own the music, you know, because it's not driven by one person. Mm. I don't think any of us feel responsible for it, and therefore we all feel lucky to be a part of it. And I remember the gig you're talking about, and I'm sure you hear this a lot from musicians, but the audiences in Ireland are the best in the world in terms of really getting into the spirit of it and it really being a two-way exchange. And, it means the world to us that people pay attention and that people also know they can freak out when they want. You know, I love that.
I had to tell you about a conversation that I had on the balcony on Tuesday. We might embarrass you, my friend. I was talking to some of the female members of Today FM and telling them that you were going to be coming in to play live for us, and they said he's got tree trunk ties. He's a hulk of a man. And quite simply, a ride. The girls down the back, they're all saying this. What does this effect you have on women? Do you wear links or something? What's going on?
They shut about the Specsavers. I have hollow legs, actually.
you're big into your swimming as well, because we talk about this quite a lot. I mean, this weather, have you been out at all? Have you put the old budgie smugglers on and gone for a little swim?
At the Speedos, yeah. At some sight.
Do you make your way down to Dollymount, or what do you do?
Yeah, I've been on the bull ball and off Ballscadden.
Yeah.
And a big huge seal came up the other day, just beside my friend, and he got a terrible fright, you know.
I'd say he did. I'd say he plopped the pants, did he?
You can get the clap off sales, you know.
You can tell the man is in top form today. Damien Dempsey, what are you going to play for us?
The apple of my eye.
Ah, see, this is breaking my heart. This is one of my favourite songs. Ladies and gentlemen, give it up. Live on Today FM, from the roof of Today FM, Damien Dempsey.
All you radio heads there, sing along if you know it.
My guitar on me.
Well, we got
got a lot of reaction, as I said earlier on, to some of the paper coverage in relation to John Waters. A lot of response by text and calls. One of those calls came in the form of somebody saying that they wanted to effectively give John Waters his case or do some defence on his behalf. That came from Sinead O'Connor. Sinead, what is it that you wish to say?
I guess what I want to say is that I think people need to step back here and try to be a little more careful of how they're managing this situation. Now, I need to make clear that I don't agree with John on many of the points that he makes. I think that would be quite obvious. However, John is someone that I love and is a father of one of my children. I neither agree with nor respect a lot of the views that he expresses. However, I think a person is entitled to express their views, in as rational a manner as possible. He hasn't gone around committing violence on anyone. He hasn't gone around, hurting people. He's expressed his views. They're unpopular, or they're unpopular with me. However, he's a human being. He's entitled to express his views. Now, what's bothering me this morning particularly is that, at this stage, as of today, as far as I'm concerned, what's begun to happen is a bit of a witch hunt, and I think it's actually quite dangerous. Now, what John has said about depression, I feel he was trapped slightly by the Sunday Independent into saying. And I think to a certain extent the Sunday Independent are probably gloating over what's happening here. The man was referring to himself, that he doesn't believe himself in depression, that he is a person who suffers from depression. In my understanding, the quotes that he made about depression, I think have been taken slightly out of context.
Well, just for people who haven't heard it, let me just reiterate what was quoted in the article. Yeah. He said...
No, I know what he said.
Just from our listeners' perspective, it'd be because it's a while since we discussed it. I don't believe in depression. There's no such thing. It's an invention. It's bullshit. It's a cop-out.
Imagine Sky doing GAA games. We just wondered in the Gift Grub offices yesterday what it would be like, what might happen, how it would all pan out, and this is what happened.
Sky, believe in Slither.
Welcome to the first day of the GAA season on Sky Sports. Let's go straight over to the Hurling Championship with Paul Merson, who's watching the game at Nolan Park. Kilkenny versus Wexford Merss.
Oh, I thought this was going to be lively, Jeff, but the Kilkenny boys, they've come out with sticks, Jeff. Oh, I don't believe it. So have the Wexford lads. This could kick off lively, Jeff.
Phil Thompson, Cork versus Kerry in the football in Park.
A cracking start here, Jeff. The Cork lads are going at it. It's like as if there's 15 of them on the pitch, Jeff. Tomás Clancy, he grabs the ball. He's got it now. He's in front of goal. Oh. He can't miss. Oh, he's blasted it over, Jeff. Oh. What a miss, Jeff.
He'll be disgusted at that, Phil, won't he?
Well, that's what I thought, Jeff, but they're patting him on the back and the scoreboard is saying 1-0, Jeff. This is a bit queer.
Waterford, Tipperary, huge anticipation down in Walsh Park, where Jeff Shreves is talking to Waterford legend John Mullane. Jeff.
Thanks, Jeff. John, can Waterford make it out of Munster this year?
Well, you know, deal with the deal.
I believe Waterford can come out of Munster this year. Tipperary will be tough, of course, and you can never write off Clare. But for me, something blah.
By the way, confirmation that Dublin versus Kildare will go ahead today after Garth Brooks has given us permission to the Dubs to use Croke Park. Oh! Back to Paul Merson at Kilkenny Wexford at Nolan Park.
Oh, there's trouble here, Jeff, for the strawberry pickers. The boy, Podge Doran, Jeff of Wexford, he's batted him, Jeff. He's batted him with the stick, Jeff. Oh. Straight into Richie Hogan's face. And the ref's reaching for a card, Jeff.
Is it a red or a yellow, Paul?
I don't believe it, Jeff. It's black.
Black? What does black mean, Paul?
I don't know. It's unbelievable, Jeff. I think he's been sentenced to death, the lad.
Oh.
That's a bit harsh, Jeff, considering. Oh, my God, that's a bit harsh.
They're telling me to hold on to you there. Listen, will you join me in this, Michelle? I know you will. We're going to dedicate this because we'll just take a moment out.
You're gonna make me cry again.
Yeah. Do you know this? You know what
I
it
do.
Is.
Yep.
Yeah.
I'm sick of it.
Did you shed a tear on Saturday?
I did, like a fool.
Yeah. I never saw so many men, grown men, crying in Lansdowne Road on Saturday. It was unbelievable.
That was very emotional. Very emotional.
It was absolutely a great day.
And he played so well.
Oh, he stopped three offloads, three tries. Yeah. Unbelievable.
Yeah. Hello?
Hello?
Is that Brian O'Driscoll?
It is. How are you doing?
Say hello to Michelle there.
Hello, Michelle. How are you?
Brian, hello. Thank you so much.
I'm sorry I missed you on Saturday. I didn't vanish off early. I was the last one on the bus.
Unbelievable.
Oh, my God. Hello.
I hope you had a good day. I had a good one.
Fantastic day. Thank you very much.
Glad to hear it. We'll have to sort out the picture another time.
Oh, Brian, anytime.
Give me a shout when you're down and see you feel, Brian.
Okay, right so.
Brian, you have to see this picture because you are there and it looks like you're looking right into the back of Michelle's head.
That was the thing. That I was pretending that I was just, you know, ambling along the corridor, but I was actually staring straight into her camera.
Oh, God, Brian. I don't know if you remember when you guys won the Heineken Cup the first time. I brought my kids down to the training at Wicklow Grounds and you were going off to get your eyes lasered and my son got me your autograph by telling you, my mum loves you, please sign it.
Kids are great, aren't they? mine is currently ripping the place up here.
And there goes the final whistle at the Etihad Stadium. Manchester City 2, West Ham United 0. Manchester City champions of the Premier League.
Well, I'm looking at Pellegrini with his arms aloft, Ron. We don't see him showing too much emotion too often, and I'm delighted for him today. He's carried himself with a bit of class most of the season. No slagging other managers or slagging other teams or talking about too many instances didn't go for them. He's just got on with the job, made sure they performed to as best they could, as often as they could. He's improved a lot of the players. Fellas like Kolarov and Nasri, Zeko have been a lot better than they were in previous seasons. And it's a great day for him. No trophies, big trophies in 10 years, but the biggest of all in English football today.
Well, they were already League Cup winners earlier in the season, but now this is the big one. They are the Premier League champions for 2014. And, well, we did have a pitch down in front of us just a little while ago. Now it is just a sea of fans, all of them in blue, of course. The players, still some of the players, are in amongst that mass of humanity. Most of them battling their way to get through so that they can get down the tunnel and into the dressing room. They will no doubt appear in a short while, but it's going to take a little while to clear this, I can tell you. It seems every single Manchester City fan has descended on the pitch, descended on the players. Most of them have no shirts as they now try and battle down the tunnel. I can see Aguero just managing to somehow or other get his way through that crowd. Pellegrini, the manager, has already disappeared down the tunnel. So too as Company, the captain, and most of the players now seem to have got their way through. But this is quite amazing, Brian.
Yeah, it's like the photographs you saw the 1923 Cup Final. The white horse is needed now to get the people off the pitch. In these days of hundreds and thousands of stewards, we don't see scenes like this too often. I'm sure eventually they get the supporters off the pitch, but it's great. It's a sign of the end of the frustration and the all the days when they wondered, was it going to be Liverpool's league or Arsenal's league or Chelsea's league? Now they know it's their league and they're out there on the pitch celebrating and cheering. I don't know how the players got back in, if they did all get back in.
Well, Zabaleta seems to be about the last of them. He doesn't have a shirt left, of course. I don't think he's got much else left as well. But I think most of them now have managed to make their way down the tunnel. But the bare facts are that Manchester City have beaten West Ham United by 2-0. Remember, coming into this game, they simply needed a draw to win the Premier League title. Well, they've done that, and they've done it in some style. Goals by Sami Nasri in the first half, and Vincent Kompany, appropriately enough, the captain in the second half. Still some players try to battle through this enormous crowd. We cannot see the pitch at all now. It is just a sea of humanity, of blue humanity. But Manchester City have won the title They are champions yet again of the Premier League, twice now in 3 years. It ended here at the Etihad, Manchester City 2, West Ham United 0.
Christmas is big with me, so big in fact that I used to get sick. I worried so much when I was younger that I actually physically got sick with the worry that I hadn't been a good boy, that I wasn't on the nice list, and that Santa wouldn't come. Now, I've grown up a little bit now. I don't stress out quite as much, but I do put a lot of prep into it, and I'm trying to pass on the same stress and neurosis to my children. No, I'm not.
Some of our presenters have a slightly controversial approach as to when the presents can be opened. As Louise Duffy explains.
Christmas Eve, we usually have a little lunch party with all my family. My uncle has a pub in Ballinan, we all go there. And then Christmas Eve night, we go for midnight mass. And when we come home, we're very impatient, we're very bold in our house, and we open up all of our Christmas presents on Christmas Eve.
Ian Dempsey says he's all for presents on Christmas Eve, but he has met with some opposition.
I'm trying to change the rules so that we kind of give each other presents on Christmas Eve, but everybody in our house has said, no way, no way. They like the Christmas morning thing, although the actual time has changed slightly
not
over the years.
Not quite as early anymore.
Not quite as early as it used to be. And sometimes we still try to do the 8:30 in the morning and they're all going, oh, I'm not getting up, oh, me head, or whatever. So we're going to maybe bring it in at a more polite time of maybe 10:30, 11 o'clock and see what happens. Get the sausages going, the Super Quinn sausages in the morning, and that the smell of that normally wafts up and wakes up anybody who's got a sleepy little head on them, you know.
Speaking of sleep, KC isn't expecting any on the 24th, thanks to young Robin.
She'll go to bed at 7. She won't sleep until 3 o'clock in the morning. She'll get half an hour of sleep, and then we'll come down to her just tearing a million presents open and playing with the wrapping paper.
And while Louise says there is a hint of regret at the present opening frenzy the night before, they make up for it later.
We feel bad on Christmas Day when we know everybody else in the world is probably opening up lovely presents, and we're like, oh, that's so yesterday. But it's lovely because we sit around the fire and it's late at night and we have a couple of drinks and open the presents. And then it gets even later. We go to a party in my uncle's house. Where I live at home, there's about 40 families and we're all related, so we all just visit each other and annoy each other all Christmas long. So then on Christmas Day, they all come to our house. There could be about 80 people milling through the house before dinner. And then we've dinner and then we go to someone else's house. So it's basically eating, drinking, eating, cleaning up, eating, drinking, eating. And that's our rituals for Christmas.
We're back, we're back. Fever pitch here, fever pitch. The good news is this morning we started off with €120,000. Aidan has just informed me that the latest total for Shave or Die 2014 is €251,000. That's over $250,000. So thank you to everybody who's put their hands in their pockets this morning and text, and everybody who's organised some of those 4,000 events around the country. And let's say thank you as well to everybody in the Mansion House. Give them a round of applause and keep the applause going. Thanks to our amazing technical staff, Colin Gav, Derek Aiden, and all in engineering. Of course, Pam and Mairead, Siobhan and Jenny and Will and Mairead. Give them a round of applause. But two people who've been driving this and will continue to drive it, will you please put your hands together for Sean and Jill? Thank you very much. Now, Anna Orford is here from the Guinness World Records. She's been clicking and counting. And did you have to actually touch people on the head? You did a bit of that.
It's a bit of a fetish, actually. So I quite enjoy it. And I'm shaving this guy's head after the attempt as well.
Are you? All right. Yes. Right. That's lovely. Lovely.
Yes.
Round room in Mansion House where love stories begin. I'm sure he's happily married. I'm sure you're in a relationship. So don't start in there. Okay, so
he's just here with his son. So.
All right, give us the details then. 77 is the current record.
77 was the current record.
Yeah, and who made that and where were they?
That was in Australia last year, also for a cancer charity. Now, there were 179 of you here and 179 barbers. So, did I have to disqualify anybody? No, because you all achieved the Guinness World Record.
Breakers! There you go! Record number 5! Well done you! Well done you! The most heads shaved simultaneously achieved by the Radio Show listeners as part of Today FM Shaver Day 2014 in Dublin, Ireland, the 21st of February 2014. There it is! Wow! There it is! Celebrations!
So, on behalf of Guinness World Records, I just wanted to thank you all because you are all officially amazing. Congratulations!
And the biggest thank you of the day goes to you, our barbers, and those people who volunteer their heads and their hair. Thank you very much. That's it. Good luck. We've done it again. That tonight's gonna be a